Okay, good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 Repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I am net control for today, Tuesday, July 27th, 2021.
Welcome. This is the WA7ABU Repeater.
Okay, that's true. I just said that. And let's see, this net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is designated emergency frequency, so it'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness. I guess we need to talk about COVID-19 again. All amateur trappers are welcome to participate in the discussions. We'll start with check-ins as with stations that like to participate or maybe just listen in on the discussion. When you check in with, please identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. Okay, EchoLink users, who's out there for the emergency prep net?
Good evening, Brett. This is Whiskey 7, Mike Tango, with my crazy Eugene EchoLink.
Okay, we just had a double on EchoLink, because I think Dan made it so you can actually have mixed audio. So I got Craig, but I didn't hear the Corvallis station. So we got Whiskey 7, Mike Tangley, McCraig from Eugene. Who was calling from Corvallis? Please repeat.
Good evening. That's Kilo Juliet 7, Whiskey Echo Golf, Malachi, Corvallis.
Kilo Juliet 7, November Whiskey Kilo, Nick in Almsville on EchoLink also.
There's a couple more. That was Kilo Echo 7, Whiskey Echo Golf, Malachi. Did I get that right?
My apologies. I must have said it wrong. It's Kilo Juliet 7, Whiskey Echo Golf, Malachi.
Okay, let me try that again, because I actually have another guy named Mike who is Kilo Echo 7. So let's try this again. Let's see. Whiskey Echo Golf, Kilo Juliet 7. I have to enter you into my database, and then we'll look you up, and unless we'd like to have the name Mike instead of Malachi. Nope, there's Malachi. I got you checked in. Thank you for checking in. Got it. There, a little confusion there. So Mike did not check in. I think he might also be from Corvallis. So go ahead and delete that. Okay, and then we got Nick that checked in, Kilo Juliet 7, November Whiskey Kilo. Okay, was there anybody else on EchoLink? Okay, let's take general check-ins for the emergency prep net.
Good evening. This is Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike, Steve Albany.
Good evening, Brett. This is Kilo Echo 7, Alpha, Sierra, Mike, and it's Doug in South Salem.
Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray, plane also in South Salem, next to my brother, the Air Force guy.
Good evening. This is Kilo Juliet 7, Yankee Tango Hotel, Tony in Lebanon.
Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, Allen in South Salem.
Okay, there's a little pause in the action. I'll work backwards through that. That was Alan, Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel. Before that was Tony, Kilo Juliet 7, Yankee Tango Hotel. We had Blaine, Kilo Juliet 7, Echo Charlie X-ray. And then Doug, Kilo Echo 7, Alpha Sierra Mike. And Steve was in there starting us off, Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike. Okay, and that's nine of us. Anybody else out there?
Well, KE7, Victor, Whiskey X-ray, ever.
Okay, there's the Everett. Welcome, Kilo Echo 7, Victor Whiskey X-ray. Got you checked in. Anybody else? Okay, well, we can pause here and we can do some announcements for the net. Does anybody have any announcements? Come now, please. Okay, well, I'll just go ahead and do the normal repeater announcements. Of course, tonight is Tuesday. I guess if you were on the net earlier, you would have heard the Euthanet on Tuesday at 5:30. Hopefully, you got to talk to them. 5:30 to 6 is the Euthanet. Tonight, of course, is the Emergency Preparedness Net. We have nets every night, basically, during the week at 7 p.m. So Wednesday is the Slow Scan TV net, Thursday is the Mesh net, and Friday is our Aerospace Discussion net. Saturday night is our Swap net. So you only have to remember kind of one time. So we try not to change the times on you there. Monday night we have our Heritage net. That's another one that's very popular. So, yep, just, I guess, keep it on the dial right after dinner, maybe, or during dinner and 7 p.m. Sunday night, I guess you also can check into an LDS church net at 7 o'clock, I guess. Or maybe it's at 6. That one might be the only oddball out of there. Gosh. Anyway, always fun stuff here on the 529. Let's see. What else is there that's fun coming up? Let's see. We had our balloon land somewhere in the Beaverton area today, if you're interested in radio science, and you're up there. I don't know if nobody's checked in really from the Portland area. Scramble and go get one. They had a bunny hunt on Sunday. The groups that like to go chase down signals from radios met on Sunday up at the rest area just south of Wilsonville, where you cross the Willamette River there. And they had a event there and did some good bunny hunting and also swapped over some of these radio sounds that we've picked up, and they might be using some of those for work as bunnies, because they're basically free electronics that fall out of the sky twice a day. So one of our friends and hams, Jeff, KI7OEK, has figured out how to reprogram them. Put some fresh batteries in them, and you got yourself a little bunny there that's broadcasting on the 70-centimeter band. So we'll look forward to seeing more of that kind of stuff happening. Does anybody else have any other announcements? Come now, please. Okay, well, it's 10 minutes after. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Let's see if anybody else wants to check in. All right, so I guess we can get started here. I guess, except for Malachi, who's new, I think I might be preaching to the choir here when I tell you that, you know, again, situational awareness on this COVID-19 stuff is that, you know, the cases are rising again. And if you have listened to me in the past, you probably can tell me why the cases are rising. So let's get the consensus here, okay? And Blaine asked, wrote me an email and asked me to clarify what is happening with this virus, because there's a key piece of information that should drive all of your, you know, responses to this virus in terms of transmissibility. I will just tell you once again, this is an airborne virus. Airborne, okay? Not off the doorknob, off, that's not the primary way it transmits. It's airborne, it floats around, and it floats, concentrates in areas where the airflow is not good. Now, keeping that in mind, okay, what have we done differently that may have led to increased infections? Who would like to venture a guess? So that, see how well you, this is the, your brief mini quiz.
After that, I have a question for you, Brad, WA7ABU.
Okay, Dan, I got you checked in. Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo uniform. Now, I don't want to make this an opportunity to say, you know, people are behaving badly, because they aren't necessarily behaving badly. They're just behaving like people, okay? And they are kind of, you know, ignoring the facts of how you get this virus and how you kind of avoid the virus, okay? And there were lots of things that we did before we had vaccines to help us avoid the virus, and we did those, and they were somewhat effective, okay? But remember why it's called a novel coronavirus. That means that you haven't seen it before. Your immune system has not seen it before. And you know, you might have a very good immune system and you might fight this off and you might not get all that sick from it. Those who don't have good immune systems can't, okay? And those people, you know, of course, we put all of our efforts, you know, huge scientific efforts into creating a pool of vaccines which can help prime your immune system so that when you see that virus, it's not a novel virus. You've seen it before, and you can mount an immune response. Now, that's also another key piece of information. What vaccines do is it's kind of like, you know, you get a warning, right? You expose the body. Anytime you're exposed to a, you know, foreign agent or antigen, it's called an antigen, it's something that mounts an immune response, an antigen, creates an immune response. Now, the first time that you see something, you don't really make that good of a response to it. It takes a while, but then there are these cells that remember, you know, they live a long time, and they remember what that infection looks like, and so the next time you see the infection, the body really ramps up its defenses and creates a big immune response and helps clear the virus, okay? So, and that's what the vaccines do. So by vaccinating you, you give yourself a heads up, hey, you know, whenever you see the stuff coming, you know, do something about it, right? And oftentimes, again, it helps. What we found is that for people, most of the vaccines, two out of the three we get here, if you give two shots, you get a better, stronger immune system response than one shot. But the one vaccine, Johnson & Johnson, also does not a bad job with just one shot, okay? So with that in mind, okay, that, you know, you have people out there who have had vaccines, and they are ready when they see a variant or the original strain of the coronavirus to do something about it. Let me get a break here. Okay, those people who have not had the vaccine, or those people who saw the original variant, whatever you want to call that, whether that was the pre-alpha one back in the spring of last year, they really have not seen the new variants that are coming around the bend, the new one being most excitedly the Delta variant, which is different enough that, you know, their previous exposure, doesn't help them very much in terms of being prepared to fight this one off, all right? So they don't mount that great of immune response, and they can get sick. And the problem with the Delta variant is it makes lots of virus when you get sick with Delta. It doesn't necessarily make you sicker than the original one if you were going to get sick from it, but it sure produces a lot of more virus and spews it out into the air, all right? So this is an airborne virus. Very, very key piece of information, which we didn't know back in March of last year, and which they really didn't want to tell us to kind of, you know, really admit to the fact that this is airborne, because it's a little more different, a little harder to deal with an airborne virus than it is a virus you catch from surfaces. Okay, let me pause there for any questions. Again, what do you think that's different now? Who has a comment? Why are we suddenly getting more infections again? Okay, so I remember I've talked to you guys in the past about which statistic I want you to look at. And I usually want you to look at the hospitalization rate, because if you look at those different graphs that you'll see, what you'll find is that the smoothest graph, actually, well, maybe not state by state, but the smoothest one you'll see is the hospitalization rate, because there's just a certain number of people who end up sick. All right. Now, another kind of interesting thing about this is the reports are that in places where we're seeing rises in hospitalization, it does correspond to those places that have fewer numbers of people, percentage-wise, who have received a vaccine. Okay. So those places that have the lowest vaccine rate have a higher hospitalization rate. That seems to be a trend. Okay. And that should make sense to you, right? But those people, there are reporting that those people who are in the hospital seem to have the Delta variant. That is the strain that most people have. In some cases, nearly all the people have the Delta variant. There are a couple other variants. We're not going to talk about those tonight, coming around the bend. But they, you know, various. The Delta is the most infectious one right now. So that's the one that. We're the most concerned about, because it's the one you're likely to be exposed to.
Comment, Brett, W7ABU.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
I've heard a few people, particularly on TV, that are real reluctant to get the vaccine. But you might want to ask yourself, what is it that five presidents and at least four vice presidents that I'm aware of have received the injection, including the last two presidents and the last two vice presidents. So what do they know that you don't, WA7ABU?
Yep, KG7GDB. Yep, well, okay, so again, as far as I think most people here now, have been listening to me for a while, and we talked about vaccinations, and I think probably nearly everybody I'm talking to is listening to me right now has been vaccinated. I hope you have, because I think at this stage, here's the deal. What I would tell your reluctant neighbors or friends or family members who don't want to get a vaccine, okay, remember, we have other vaccines. Like, did you ever get a tetanus shot? That's a vaccine. Did you ever get, mumps, measles, rubella, all these different things that we don't see very often, which were pretty bad problems? Measles is highly infectious, and it can kill people, too. It's more infectious than COVID, all right? We don't see it because we vaccinate people for it. But, you know, we didn't really go to our president or our vice president or our, you know, Twitter feed or our Facebook or whatever to decide to take those vaccines. You know, they were... You know, what I would just say is go ask your healthcare provider about it, okay? If you have any questions about medical things, that's what you need, a physician or healthcare provider. It's your person that takes care of you. That's the one that you want to ask, because they know your background. They know your risks. They know whether or not you have, immunocompromised immune systems. They know what your history is. And I suspect that they will answer any questions about the, whether or not you should get the vaccine. And I suspect that nearly all of them have been vaccinated themselves. So let's just kind of keep those medical questions for your doctor, okay? Just like the commercials on TV. Ask your doctor, right? That's not bad advice, and you know, they are working for you, for your benefit, and I think they'll give you the straight answer. Okay, let me get a drip there. Okay, so, yeah, remember, the doctors you hear on the TV or the doctors that work at the CDC or the doctors, they're not your doctor. They're public health people have a different role in society. They have a role of trying to get the vast majority of people to behave in a certain way that they think will reduce the overall risk of infection, in case of the Centers for Disease Control, for controlling the disease better. If they can convince the large number of people to do things in a certain way, then they hope that things will be better. So, in politics aside, there are politics in there. Okay, I don't like to talk about politics on the air. That's a sort of unwritten rule. But it, you know, there was a new rule that was made today, and I will say that the rule, you know, is for a new mask guidance. Okay, so you should be able to tell me right now. I'm looking at this mask guidance, and it doesn't, you know, it says, well, you know, you need to wear a mask if you're vaccinated in a place where where there's they even specify a number. This is the thing that doesn't make any sense to me. Yes, in areas where there is or outbreaks of virus, you know, everyone is advised to wear a mask. Okay, now, but when that's basically the problem was before, and I mentioned this, is that why did we take it away in the first place? And this is where the confusion arises, because I don't think it was very good advice to take away the recommendations for mask wearing. Let's go back again to how you catch this virus. You can tell me what the deal is, okay? Because if you have a airborne virus and you have a new strain which is more contagious, okay, what situations do you think would be really good for catching the virus? Okay, what do you think you should do if you really want the virus to go up in numbers? Let's say, okay, let's take away all the masks, open up all the businesses, let people do whatever they wanted to do, go into places as normal, and just behave as if it's all gone, and see what happens with 50% of the people vaccinated. And what do you see happen?
Question, Brent? KB7CCM.
Oh, there's Paul. I'll check in. Kilo Bravo 7. Pop up, pop on mic. Go ahead, Paul.
You know, this world is really scary. There's all these different interesting bacteria and all this other silly things going on. What about monkeypox? POX. That's spread in the United States. Is that something we should worry too?
Yeah, I suppose you should worry about every kind of virus, but let's again go back to what's risk and what do we worry about? What are risky situations versus unrisky situations, right? So we know that there are certain diseases that you would encounter, okay? Monkeypox is not one of them that you would probably encounter. We've had some pretty bad viruses out there, Ebola virus and things. That was a really bad one. And these places come from, you know, places in Africa. If you happen to travel to places where these, you know, unusual, powerful infections exist, then, you know, you take extra special precautions and you do things like quarantining yourself and you look at, you know, limiting travel to those areas and things like that, you know, so as not to spread it, okay? But this one is different, Paul. This is that right now COVID's back coming up again. So I'm just trying to get people to understand that it's a change in a couple of things that are happening, but the mechanism is exactly the same as it always has been. So, you know, we have we have a virus that is more infectious than it was because it's mutated, okay? And that mutated version produces more viral particles, and it's more likely that you'll breathe it in, okay? So let's say, now, in those situations, what could we do to avoid breathing it in, all right? Well, if you're not vaccinated, stay away from closed, crowded places like restaurants and things. And we know that the viral particles hang out in the air for a long time, for hours. They did those studies back a long time ago, okay? So, again, try to avoid places where lots of people, you know, in the air is not being recirculated and it's, you know, concentrating, you know, more virus. Anything that would concentrate the virus is going to increase your chances of breathing it in, right? So you're not going to breathe in monkeypox, going to the local place in Salem, probably. Plus the monkeypox has pretty severe symptoms. But you might breathe in COVID because a person without symptoms can be producing COVID particles and not even know it. Okay? So, you just got to limit your exposure to that. So, however, if you get a vaccine, then even if you can get it, but it's much, much less likely that you will ever get really sick from it. So, another thing that might be confusing to people is that, you know, like these athletes and you know, they're testing positive for COVID in Japan, and they've taken extraordinary precautions to, you know, avoid this, okay? And then, now I don't know the statistics, I will say. I don't know the statistics of the athletes who have been vaccinated or not vaccinated, okay? But, you know, if you are vaccinated and you do get COVID, you will test positive for COVID. Yay, okay? All right, so, but you may not be sick, right? But you will test positive for COVID. That's correct. Does that make sense to you that you would test positive for COVID if you're exposed to the COVID virus and you fight it off? Right. So the thing is that this is normal, right? You're going to get an infection. And remember, the immune system fights it off, all right? So that means there's a little bit of that virus around, and you get better, you know? You probably don't show much symptoms at all from it, okay? That's what's supposed to happen. That's what would happen if, we were exposed to this thing over years and years and years, and eventually people probably will get a natural immunity to things that are exposed to it like this. So, you know, you will, if you go around testing for viruses, you will find, you know, small amounts of virus in people, okay? Very sensitive tests for these things. Now, on the other hand, if you have not had a vaccine, chances are pretty darn high, like really, really, really high, that if you're exposed, you're going to get it, okay? Because it's so much more virus, and it's also so much more contagious. So each person that gets it produces more virus, thus concentrating it in the air, okay? So, anyway, we knew this was going to happen. We just, if we sort of threw off the masks and we went about our business, went back and did everything the way we've normally done it, we're really just saying, okay, how much did the vaccination that we do reduce the numbers? And we'll see if it peaks as high as it did. It may not, you know, peak as high, but it doesn't mean that people aren't still getting sick, okay? So that's kind of what I have to say about the, you know, what's happening currently. So, you know, you can argue, the masks or whatever, okay? But I've been wearing my mask all along, even though they, said I didn't have to wear it. I just went ahead, if I have to go indoors, I try to limit time indoors, wear my mask, and leave as soon as I can, okay? And I've been vaccinated. So it's just limiting my exposure, and if I did get a very, very mild COVID, it limits the other people's exposure to me. So that's it, you know? But the mask is not going to keep you, you know, from getting this thing, okay? It's the exposure to the air. That's the thing. It's the how much air do you breathe that other people have breathed. All right, so increase the ventilation, go outside, you know, that disperses the particles, chances are you won't get it out there, okay? So that's about all that's new, really, that's happened with this stuff. So any questions or comments at this point?
KK7ART with the late check-in and the comment.
K7VBY checking in and also a comment.
Okay, we have Art there, Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, and Gary, Kilo 7, Victor Bravo Yankee, other net control for the TechNet. Let's see, go ahead, Art, with your comment first, and then Gary.
Yeah, well, I mean, I went and took two doses of the Pfizer vaccine after having actually had COVID. A, I didn't want to catch it again, and B, I didn't really want to give it to anybody. But, you know, now it looks like this vaccine that I hope would keep me from giving it to anybody is far less than effective at that. Even though it might keep me safe, it's not necessarily going to stem transmission like other vaccines have for other diseases in the past. So is this going to be a situation like with influenza where we're kind of chasing our tails every year to come up with something that's going to work on the Echo, Foxtrot, and Golf variants next year, or are they actually going to be able to get rid of this thing? Just wondering your take on the situation. KK7ART.
Yeah, so, you know, my take on it, it's hard to say, but it sounds like it's going to be, you know, just from a biological standpoint, if this is, the more opportunity, the more infections it have, the more opportunity it has to mutate and develop into new strains, okay? And, you know, we never got rid of the flu. Although a lot of the things that we did to protect ourselves from COVID really reduced the number of flu cases. I don't know that we had any more flu vaccines than normal, okay? But some of our behaviors are effective. It's, you know, they're not preventative. There's nothing that's preventative, but there are some effective things that we can do, okay? So, it's only been July, I think, is when they started the clinical trials for all the vaccines that we have. So we had 1 year of experience with these vaccines to see how well they work. Now, let me get your pair. Now, you mentioned that you got a vaccine after having had the original, whichever, I don't know, strain of COVID, hopefully, and I don't know if you tested, you know, positive for it or not. There were people that got things like the flu, you know, around the March and things like that, as they normally would, you know, and maybe that wasn't even COVID. But they do say, in some of the articles I read, that people who are vaccinated, who after having had COVID, get like the best immune response. So they get a really good immune response, and it should be, you know, very effective. Now, how long it lasts, we don't know yet, because it hasn't even been a year. For most people, the earliest that people got it in large quantity was in December, right? So what are we looking at here, 8 months? And what we're seeing, and what we're trying to figure out, is this thing. Let's just talk a little about what is a breakthrough case, okay? Breakthrough case. So, you know, remember what they've tried to make a vaccine that would prevent people from dying or go to the hospital. That's the idea, okay? And it needed to be efficacious. It needed to work on 50. It needed to be at least 50% efficacious in order to be qualify as a vaccine. The ones that we got ended up 90%, like the Pfizer and the Moderna one, 90% or more efficacious. And over time, as we've given it to millions of people around the world, we can tell you its effectiveness, which is the real world thing, is that yes, somewhere between 90 and 95% of the people are protected against going to the hospital or dying from this thing, okay? Some people get sick, all right? Now, see, Dr. Sun and I were talking about this, and she said, one way I can explain it is what's different now these days, okay? So let me get another pause here. So let's say, you know, we had the, you know, I don't know, a batch of the original variant, whether you want to call that alpha or the one before that, that we made the vaccine against, the one that was present back in July that we sequenced. We actually sequenced it, I say we, I didn't really do it, but we collectively as a society sequenced this thing back in January of last year. And that sequencer was released and people made the models for the vaccines on that original sequence. Okay, when that was given, if we say filled the room with that original stuff and we marched in a bunch of people, okay, that had the vaccine, probably only say 100 people who were vaccinated, probably only 3 to 5 people would actually get an infection from that, providing that, you know, the viral load was high enough in the air and they all sat in there long enough to breathe it all in. 3 out of the 100 people would get sick with the two vaccines, okay? Get it up again. They would probably also, of those people, only a very small number would have to go to the pit. Now, many, many more people would end up in the hospital. And that number, I think earlier we were saying maybe might be 10% of those 3 people, you know? So, again, we'd have to increase our numbers a lot of those people who ended up in the hospital, okay? And really, none of the people who were involved in the clinical trials died from COVID after having been vaccinated. So that was really good. All right, so pretty darn effective, right, at that. Now, the new strain, what they claim, is that it is more infectious, right? So if you take the same group of people, expose them to Delta variant, the same, what they would find is that the Delta variant would infect 15, maybe, as an example of those vaccinated people, okay? Because it's not the one that they were, you know, inoculated against. And so, you know, there'll be a variety of immune responses. But 85% of the people will mount a good immune response and not get sick from that exposure, okay? So the final example is that then you march in 100 people who have not been vaccinated at all. And how many get the Delta variant? All of them. Okay? All of them. Okay, now, so that's just kind of the way I think it's helpful to think. And this, okay, I will say that this is not from a, you know, I can't point to the paper that tells you these numbers, but it's a way of thinking about it, of the relative risk of this thing, okay? So if you're exposed to something that's completely novel and new and it is more infectious, it's more likely that you'll get it, and therefore, you know, it is more infectious. It's more contagious, right? And then you send those people out in the world, and there have been reports that people are getting sick earlier and producing higher viral loads with the Delta variant than they were with the previous variants, like the Alpha variant in Great Britain, okay? Now, all right, so all that, you know, what they are also saying, and let's have a breakthrough case. A breakthrough case is someone who ends up in the hospital even after having been vaccinated, okay? Because those are the ones that they kind of consider to be, it's like, okay, well, they didn't really work very well. You know, they got into the hospital, so what's the deal with that, you know? So the breakthrough case is what they're saying, and again, they don't have as much access to they're not talking as much about the science part of this, but what they're saying is that those people are actually the ones that did not get a very good immune response to their vaccine, okay? And we talked about, you know, people, this is where you have to go to your doctor, right? Okay, if you have had chemotherapy, if you have had kidney dialysis, they have a lot of different examples, people who take immunosuppressants for a variety of, you know, autoimmune diseases like lupus or psoriasis or something like that, they can actually blunt their immune system, okay? So those people, if they get the vaccine, they don't mount a very good immune response, even though they've been vaccinated. Those seem to be the people who end up in the hospital, okay? So you could say, like, pre-existing conditions, right? But the point is that, and the older, really older people don't mount as good an immune response to you know, to a vaccine as younger people do, all right? And that's, again, just general. It's not just this one. It's any vaccine. So, you know, that's why they always recommend that we get boosters. And I think that probably they will recommend we get boosters, and probably the boosters will be synthesized against newer variants as we, or maybe it'll be a cocktail, you know, in the future. But, yep, that's my long-winded answer for you there, Art. Any follow-up there before I go to Gary?
No, thanks for the explanation. You know, I'm just kind of curious to see how things are going to go here forward. It'd be great if they could figure out some way to just get rid of the virus and not, you know, at least everybody who gets vaccinated have 100% efficacy and not get sick and not transfer it to other people and really break the chain. But it looks like that's probably not what's going to happen. So thanks, KK7ART.
Yeah, so we'd have to have a lot better, I mean, I think it could happen that way, that we could break the chain, and we've done that with polio, and, you know, and, but, you know, what you see is interesting, like, you know, things like measles, you think, oh, measles is gone, you know, nobody gets measles anymore. Well, they do get measles, and you get measles in places where people don't want to get vaccinated. That's where you get measles. The virus will never go away, unfortunately. The virus will not go away. And, you know, smallpox is still out there in the world. But we actually, at one point in time, and it may not be the case anymore, but at one point in time, they announced that they really believed that everyone in the world had been vaccinated against smallpox. And so, therefore, it wasn't a problem. You know, but people can still get smallpox if they're not vaccinated and they're exposed to it. It's just that without the way viruses work, a virus is a parasite that takes advantage of a host. If it doesn't have a host, it doesn't grow. And eventually, you know, if it's out left exposed to sunlight and things like that, it will die. Okay, but if, as long as there's some host or an animal host for it, you know, then it will continue to survive in its population. It may or may not make the animal host sick, you know, but if it can still spread, I mean, little minks are really good at spreading this stuff, you know, then it's still going to be out there. So that's the problem, is that we never can really get rid of it as long as it has a host. All right, Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, over to Gary.
Well, thank you, Brett. Yeah, hey, I have a little different take here. I subscribe to Nextdoor. I don't know if anybody out there subscribes to Nextdoor, but I do. Anyway, there was a recent, I think it came on today, a thing about a marketplace, outdoor marketplace event over in Park Rose, which is northeast of Portland, where they gave COVID shots. And 29 people stepped up and got their shots there. So the majority of the comments on that posting was that was a good thing, and they were encouraging you know, other people to do the same. So anyway, there was a few people on there that had some reservations. But by far, the vast majority thought that was a really good thing. Anyway, 29 people got their shots. Back to you, K7VBY.
Yeah, very good. The thing is, we only have a couple of things that we can do with this, vaccines being one of them. And at this point in time, it really is just ask your doctor, okay? This is not the time to listen to the misinformation on the internet. It's not the time to listen to, you know, Aunt Sally's experience. It's not time to listen to it. It's you make medical decisions. I wouldn't ask you, and I'm not your doctor. Don't take my advice. Go ask your own doctor if you you know, worried about this. I wouldn't tell you whether you should take particular heart medicine or, you know, diuretic for your high blood pressure or any, you know, something for seizures or anything else medically that you need to do. You know, this is why people go to school for many, many years to become physicians, so they can take in all of this information and help their patients make good decisions, okay? I think that you will find that your own person who is taking care of you for when you, whatever else you are, you know, ails you, can advise you best, okay? And I wish that was, if the message is that yes, you need a doctor to take care of you, okay, and answer your questions, and they will. And you're paying them for that, okay? Just like you would advise anybody else that you were as a professional that you needed help with, you know, whether it's a tax person to do your taxes or whatever. You know, you're not going to go to, you know, YouTube and figure out how to do your taxes, you know, if you have a complicated taxes. You're going to ask the tax guy, right? So anyway, that's the point. There people are good at this. On follow-up, let me get a little bleep here. Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know politically where we should put our muscle. You know, this is trying to convince people to take something that they don't want to take because they're so confused about misinformation. It's really hard, you know, really hard. I did hear today that in San Diego, where apparently they have a lot of guest workers who cross the border a lot, you know, they decided to give their excess vaccines to the people who cross the border, these Hispanic laborers that come over and work in the Coca-Cola factory, they said, and stuff like that. You know, they're vaccinating them, and that's probably a good thing. Because the more people you vaccinate, the less likely it is that you're going to encounter the virus, right? And the people that are vaccinated, even that tiny number that gets a breakthrough infection, don't seem to be producing the kind of problem that we see among the unvaccinated people. So, anyway, that's I guess all I really have to say about the COVID tonight. Other than again, look at our numbers; they're going up. All right, that's the problem. We see it on our you can look at the coronavirus at a glance page from the Oregon Live, and you can see that the hospitalization rate is back up to 207 this week. And last week I was talking to you guys; it was like 140, so that's going up again, okay? And it's not as high as it was in May, that when we had 232, but the trend is going definitely upward, and that's a, remember, about a two-week delay from when a person gets an infection and will then get into the hospital. The deaths follow about 2 weeks after that, or longer. We're actually much better at saving people from death. And so our death numbers in Oregon are quite low, you know, like two. So that's really good. But the trend is going up. And the daily doses of vaccine administered are going down. You know, really are kind of at the end of, you know, we're giving like 4,500 doses of vaccine. And I hope that number would go up. But, you know, one-third of the people haven't had the vaccine. Actually, in Oregon, it's probably more than that, more like... is 54% basically fully vaccinated. You know, so what about the remainder of those people? 46% of those people. That's still a lot of people, right, for the virus to find and get to. So, anyway, I hated to spend the whole time talking about COVID. We did last week. Is there any other check-ins, comments, questions? If I don't know the answer, we'll try to figure it out. Okay, Kilo Echo 7, Papa Charlie Zulu, thank you for checking in. Was there anybody else? Okay, so anyway, again, as emergency preparedness goes, you know, situational awareness, you know, we're trying to be to identify real risks. Where are the risks? How does this stuff happen? The thing, again, think airborne, okay? If there's things you can do to improve ventilation or stay out of the closed spaces, that's good. Whether you're vaccinated or not, you know, definitely if you're not vaccinated, but even if you are, okay, I'm not going to make you wear a mask, but I'll wear a mask. Don't make fun of me for wearing a mask. Don't make fun of anybody for whatever their behavior is. Don't get angry at them because they're confused, okay? So, but the thing is that there are some things that help, some things that don't help. And we did sort of all of a sudden, the whole country decided, no, we're not going to wear those masks anymore. And you know, we're seeing numbers go up at this point in time. So I don't know that it necessarily caused it, but it certainly didn't help it. So combined with the new variant and combined with travel, which, although that's the other thing, is people are traveling places, you know. Florida's a big destination place. They want people to travel there. That's a great place to go. But again, common sense-wise tells us, hey, you really want to travel during a pandemic? Is that a good idea? I mean, this is just common sense, right? Don't travel if there's a pandemic, just because, yeah, especially a place like Florida. It's a nice place, but gee, you know, there's a lot of cases there, and not very many people who are vaccinated, so probably not a great idea, right? Go visit, you know, the Yukon. That might be better. KC7GB. Okay, so anyway, last week, I don't know if Blaine is still out there, but he was going to tell us, we were talking a little bit about having some food in your vehicle, in your go kit, that might be a good thing to have on hand in case you were stranded somewhere and needed to make sure that food was going to be in good shape. KJ7ECX, Blaine, are you out there? You were going to tell us the difference between the different kinds of rations that might be good to store and what the difference therein lies. Blaine, are you there?
And ECX, I'm here.
What can you tell us about boat rations, MREs, dehydrated camping food or whatever? What do you think? You have some experience with this, and we can get, this is a little bit of a round table here. People can kick in their ideas. But I hadn't heard of the boat rations. You're going to tell us about that first, I guess.
Oh, roger, roger. Deltex is approved by the United States Coast Guard, and that's pretty much what's available out there also. But also, there's a QSD brand that is available to you at Walmart. But I also want to emphasize that variety is the spice of life. I wasn't talking about being mobile. I was talking about being at home.
Okay, so tell us what the difference is and which one you would recommend that we keep in an environment that may not be, you know, it's not our home environment, that it might get hot and cold and what have you. I've seen the meals ready to eat at Walmart even Winco and Walmart. There's also variety of canned foods that's probably, you know, that are sort of prepared for, like powdered eggs and things like that, but, you know, probably don't want to carry in your car. What do you think? Which ones of these would be a good choice?
To all those veterans out there who have experienced sea rations, let me know what your worst flavors were. The lifeboat rations, plenty of water. Make sure you store water. If you're going to be, I think you're talking about being mobile. I'm talking about being at home. So, like I said, variety is the spice of life. So I taught myself how to can, and you're going to need that fat. That's just one of them things. You're going to need the fat. So I can ground beef, chicken, and pork. I haven't tried fish yet, even though my mother-in-law sends me tuna and venison, but you're going to need that fat. You're going to need the, like I said, the variety of life. I store rice, I store beans, legumes actually, beans and lentils and that sort of thing, but you just, I mean, it's up to you.
Okay. Well, and I think that probably, actually, I just wanted to kind of follow up on last week because we were talking about, you know, something that in a more extreme environment, you know, your home rations, if you provide and you have a, you know, I mean, even regular food that you purchase, you know, things like canned food, you know, has a long shelf life and reasonable resistance to, you know, changes in the environment. It's not, you know, but something that you keep in the trunk of your vehicle, you know, in your go bag, you know, that might be there for you, that withstands the elements and would be edible after a year in your bag, you know, that's the kind of stuff I'm kind of getting some ideas on. Now, I found that some things, like, you know, my standard power bar kind of thing that you can buy, you know, that reasonable in terms of, you know, having protein and fat and carbs and things. But, the you know, the coatings that they use, like if it's a chocolate-coated one, you know, that's just, that doesn't survive the environment in there very well. Some devices that, you know, if you've got a granola-type bar, which doesn't have a coating, it's going to do a little bit better, you know. So maybe other people have a favorite thing. You mentioned, you know, variety is the spice of life. There's also a morale part, I guess, when you're in a situation where you're in a stressful situation, having a food that you want to eat, you know, is probably can provide some degree of comfort and maybe, you know, a sense of normalcy, you know, if you get something that you actually would normally like to eat rather than pulling out something that you've never had before because somebody stamped, you know, whatever C ration on it. I don't think I'd ever really want to eat a C ration. The glowing reviews of you guys telling us about them, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but it wouldn't be my first choice. But I might put a jar of peanut butter in there because I think an unopened jar of peanut butter should last a pretty long time in my vehicle, and I like peanut butter.
I'd have to disagree with that. Peanut butter has fat in it. Fat goes rancid. But think about hard candy. You can go get it at the dollar store in bags.
Yep. Well, anyway, you know, peanut butter may not have as long of a, you know, a very, very long shelf life, but it's cheap and easy to get. And I guess I don't know. I haven't done the test to see how long the peanut butter could survive in the trunk. But I know that if it's sealed and unopened, it'll be there probably. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how long it would really last. My car's not sitting in the sun all day. It's under a carport. But, you know, you have to think about what would work. You're right, hard candy would work. You know, things, honey actually is supposed to be pretty darn resilient to time, you know, from that standpoint. But I guess I'm looking for ideas from other people. What have you found that you like to keep in your car that works, that at least lasts a while, or it's something that you want to eat so you can rotate it out. You know, if you something you do eat, then you can, you know, make sure that you change it out every couple months. Go ahead, and I didn't get the call sign. Say it again, please.
Kilo 7, Tom. Don't really have a suggestion for specific, but what I would say is whatever you do buy, make sure you eat before. That's what we used to teach everybody, because you don't want to try something the first time in a crisis mode and get all kinds of GI issues.
Okay, that's good advice. Is it Steve? Is that right? Or Steven? What would you prefer?
Either or is fine.
Yeah, very good point. You know, there is, yes, try it. Blaine says he won't try his mother-in-law's tuna or something, whatever you send here. But yeah, it would be helpful to taste it and know that it's something that you would like to have. I mean, you know, yes, you can, you know, you can survive on you know, whatever, you know, as long as it's food, right? But again, you have to make it's stressful. Whatever situation you're in is going to be stressful. So it's something that you would like to eat. It's going to be just that much more likely that you're going to eat it and not have, like you said, GI troubles from it. If you have medical needs, and I know there's some people out there that have diabetes and things, I bet Doug carries in a variety of different kinds of things with him. He mentioned this before about how he has to monitor his blood sugar, and he eats certain combinations of carbohydrates and proteins and things like that to maintain his sugar. Doug, do you have a go kit ASM, KE7 ASM? Do you have with different kinds of foods in it that you bring with you?
KE7 ASM. Yeah, I do. It's more granola bars that we carry with us in the vehicle. But there's also the possibility that I'll carry some nuts with me. Now, you want to be careful about the nuts. Walnuts are a good thing to have with you. If you can get sealed packs of walnuts, that's a good a way of getting nutrition. You want to stay from the hazelnuts, and you basically want to stay from the peanut, because there is some of the wrong type of fats that will go negative against your body. But walnuts is a good kind of fat that the body can use real well. My go kit basically is more, though, for insulin needles and testing strips. But yes, we do carry in our vehicle granola bars that are not really overly saturated with honey, and they're sealed, and they make a good 2 or 3 day of ration if all of a sudden you get caught out in the field somewhere. KE7 ASM, back to net.
KE7 TCM. Okay, Paul. You know, Paul is our resident mobile food expert, but I suspect you don't have a Twinkies. You're going to tell us Twinkies last forever in your trunk, right? Go ahead, Paul. All kidding aside.
Well, I had a question because MREs in the 2000s, when I bought some MREs, and they were in Arizona, but this was in the military. But anyways, the standard thing was crackers and peanut butter. So has that changed where it's not peanut butter? Another thing they put in those MREs is those energy bars, sort of like those bars that Brent were talking about, but they're a lot different. I don't know how to explain those. Are they, it's been a long time since I had that MRE, so I was kind of curious if the latest ones, they're using walnuts or some other type of nut instead of peanut butter. And the second thing is, they don't highly recommend eating MREs for a long period of time because you'll get kidney stones. I think it was what my sister told me. And so when you eat MREs, you got to drink a lot of water, plenty of water. So I don't know if that's true too.
W7ABU.
Yeah, Blaine was just saying that with the lifeboat rations to make sure that you had lots of water. Kind of anything that's sort of a concentrated food like that might very well, like you said, you're going to need water anyway. We're talking about the situation of going through a desert or southern Oregon or someplace where the temperatures are in excess of 110 degrees. Dan, go ahead with your comment.
Yeah, I think everybody has to come up with their own ideas on this. Some foods go over well with some people and not others. We have a tendency to go through one or two a week beef stew. They now have some stuff that will last for a very long time if unopened, and they're individual servings. So that means you can space out the use of it pretty good and cycle it through because it's something we'd normally eat. corned beef hash, Mary says, in I believe in the can, is pretty long storage, and you can eat it right out of the can, as well as the beef stew. And there's some other prepared items like that, but you got to watch out for high salt items because it gets old quick. WA7ABU.
Okay, yeah, another one there for watching with the water. Dan mentions a good thing about look at the sodium content of the food that you have. The nuts. It's a little different packing for like camping trip than it is packing for something to leave in a go bag. Okay, and that's the thing that we have to kind of watch for, because we want something that's going to be there for us, and I don't know, we have to figure out what the shelf life is and something that we want to eat. I don't know if you're going to bring you're not going to bring canned stew with you in your go bag, are you, Dan, or do you? That to me sounds really unappetizing. Sorry, cold stew out of a can. And having a can opener, maybe they have the pull tab things. That's something in the can, make sure it has a pull tab. That would be helpful. What can you bring that can withstand the vibration, the heat, the cooling, whatever, in your go bag, that would be, besides granola bars, which was a good example. Any other ideas?
Victor, Whiskey X-ray.
Everett, what do you got there? Hi.
Yeah, jerky. I cook the meat and then I dry it in egg dried extra hard, and it seemed to last. Anyway, the Indians used to do that.
Yeah, jerky. I've heard that, and also the Indians made something called pemmican, which was, I think, a mixture of dried meat and fat from the animal and dried berries. Things. Dried berries seem to work out pretty well. I've had things. I'm not a real raisin fan, but raisins can last a reasonable amount of time in a sealed pouch. I kind of like the little cranberry things, those little dried cranberries. They've got a lot of sugar in them. But they seem to hold up really well over it. I guess we should think about like holding up over an entire camping trip, but which food's still good at the end of the trip, after having been dragged up and down the trail and things like that. That's kind of what we're looking for. But jerky, that's not a bad I do bring things like beef jerky with me. And that does seem to taste pretty good, multiple times when you use it. That would be the kind of thing that would make me happier, to pull out and eat that was in my go kit. I don't know how long it lasts, through the heat and exposure, but in a nice sealed pouch, maybe pretty long. I don't know. Other ideas? We're actually kind of running out of time here for tonight, but maybe this is something we can revisit. So any final comments on your favorite food to bring in a go bag?
Kilo Echo 7, Papa Charlie, Zulu.
Okay, Jerry, you doubled a bit there, Papa Charlie, Zulu. Who is the double?
ASM.
Okay, stand by, Doug. Jerry, go ahead, and then Doug.
Well, most of the cans now I see have a like a pop can or something. It has a ring that comes up, and then you pull on it, and the lid opens up. But sometimes you get back into the old-fashioned ones, and you realize there's nothing to plug a cord into. And if you reach down and you look, oh yeah, here's one of these things, and they're old crank type, and they just don't work. Now you're stuck with a big knife trying to open up a can, and that doesn't work. And they do have some now that are manual, and they will open up the can without sharp edges. That's the one I get a couple of them, and I hide a few of them someplace so I can always find a third one.
Very good. Yeah, now I remember
for camping and for hiking, you know, there's the 10 essentials, and one of those 10 essentials is, you know, your multi-tool or Swiss Army knife or whatever with the camper. And if you do have such a device on your, make sure you practice that you know how to do that. Go ahead and open the can up at home and see, make sure that that's something that you, that it really is a good tool for you and it works. And you're probably not going to bring a lot of kitchen utensils around with you. You've got a weight limit, you know. But that's a good point. But they do make a little, I don't know, if they're, you know, lots of little things in pull-tab cans these days, and probably some are better than others. I'm not sure how well baby food holds up in the heat. But baby food's pretty nutritious stuff. Some of that now comes in sturdier containers, not glass. Again, some things are better than others in terms of flavor and things. Okay, Doug, back to you for the final comment.
Yes. There are containers that you can buy by going through the internet that are good. They're small containers. They don't take up much room. And the containers themselves are made of a good hard plastic. Glass is, I don't think, used anymore. I used to think that the military MREs were good, and they are, except the potted eggs. Man, you got to stay away from them potted eggs. But they're expensive, the MREs, and for that reason, I went to more commercial areas. But it's also possible, too. You can get small size dehydrators that you could use in the kitchen, and you could put cooked meat in there, dry them out, or you could put vegetables in there and dry them out. It takes a little while, but yeah, you can still do it. You can go to fruit and dry fruit out in these little dehydrators. Then along beside the dehydrators, you can also get these sandwich bags that you can get, and what they'll do, if you get to the right manufacturer, you can get them where they will vacuum out the air from the bag after you put your ration in it and seal it with low amounts of heat. And so you got a good vacuum sealed bag with good dehydrated fruit, veggies, or meat, and then you put them in the freezer. So there's various and sundry ways that can be handled. My recommendation for the person who's getting started out in trying to collect that is to use a freezer and do some testing, experimenting. KE7ASM, back to net.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole, a lot of people that really get good at preserving foods. That's another kind of part of the hobby of being emergency preparedness, and we can talk about that. It'd be a whole episode on the ways to preserve foods with vacuum sealing and dehydrating and what have you. But did you bring up something that reminds me that dehydrated foods, you know, do... Like you can buy dehydrated fruit as opposed to, or freeze-dried fruit, freeze-dried things. Those do tend to hold up pretty well, and they're lightweight. And you know, if you've ever had, you know, some dehydrated freeze-dried strawberries and things, it actually tastes really good. So again, makes you feel better to eat something that tastes really good. You feel like you're suffering quite so badly. Yeah, well, just as you think about it and you try different things, let us know what works for you, because this is, you know, sharing your ideas is part of the fun of this, too. It's letting people know maybe they haven't hasn't occurred to them. Okay, so we're out of time for this evening. It's way after 8 here. Sorry. It's 8:14, and I'm going to conclude the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. Usually we have a recording available on the WA7AVU groups.io page.
We meet each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz, and our thanks go to Dan, WA7ABU, for the use of the repeater. Thanks to all who participated and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. Now closing the net, 8:15. Oh, no. We return the repeater to normal, undirected amateur operations, KG7GDB.